Hey, listeners, a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast is now the Not Crazy Podcast. Same feed, different name. Hosted by Gabe Howard and Jackie Zimmerman. Search for Not Crazy or visit us at psychcentral.com/notcrazy. In the meantime, enjoy this legacy episode of BSP, and we hope you'll check out the new Not Crazy Podcast.
For reasons that utterly escape everyone involved, you're listening to a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. Here are your hosts, Gabe Howard and Michelle Hammer.
Welcome to a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. I'm Michelle. I'm schizophrenic.
I'm Gabe, and I'm bipolar. And we're here to discuss medication.
Medication, yes. I take some. Do you take some, Gabe?
Of course. I take many medications. I take meds every morning and every night. How right. often do you take medication?
I take 7 in the morning. No, I take 6 in the morning and I take 1 at night.
Okay, so we're on kind of the same schedule, morning yeah. and night. Mm-hmm. But I take the majority of mine at night because they kind of knock me out and they help me sleep. But you take the majority of your medications in the morning because they make you alert for the day.
Yes, I need to be alert for the day. Otherwise, I don't even know what's going on during the day.
Do you remember the time that we tried to record an episode before you had taken your medication?
I don't, because I can't really remember anything before I take my medication in the morning. So.
It was incredible. Every single question I asked you, you answered this way. Yeah. And that's it. You had the blankest stare. But it's interesting. And the reason that I bring that up is because a lot of people describe psychiatric medications as causing that blank stare, as making them, you know, tired or incoherent. But you have the opposite effect. Without your medication, I mean, I've personally seen it. You're almost blank.
I can't concentrate on anything that's going on in front of me. Nothing makes any sense. I'm not coherent at all. And if you tell me anything important, I'm not going to remember it.
I think what's funny is that sometimes you're just like, I'm like, Michelle, did you remember to do that? And you're like, did I take my meds when you told me? Like you've got that like locked and loaded. You're like ready. And I'm like, I wrote it down.
I mean, can you remember anything before you take your meds?
I can, but you know, we are treating different disorders and we react to things. So it's kind of funny because I have another excuse locked and loaded. I say to my wife all the time, did you tell me after I took my meds? Because once I take my meds at night and I climb in bed, that's when she's like, oh, I want to discuss the day with Gabe. And I'm like a downward spiral into sleep.
I think it's funny what we spoke about before. We're like, yeah, when I take my nighttime meds, sometimes I sneak down to the kitchen and eat some food. And you were like, oh my God, yeah, I did the exact same thing last night.
For people who don't know, Michelle and I's recording schedule, you know, puts us in the same place. And she sleeps in the guest room in my house because I am gracious.
I would let you sleep in my guest room if I had one.
You don't have one. You live in New York City. Well, I'm surprised you have a bathroom.
You can sleep at my roof.
I can sleep on your roof?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, that's so nice.
You get a whole roof to yourself.
You can sleep on my roof if you can get up there.
Sure. Is it flat?
No.
Well, my roof is flat.
So is your chest.
Oh, well, at least I have nipples.
That is fair. That is fair. I remember that time that your dad was like, you need to stop like bringing up Gabe's nipples because you do it too often. So he is listening to this episode right now. And he's just like, I told her not to. That's how I do your dad's voice.
I told her. He's more like, can you stop bringing up a nipples? Can you stop talking about his nipples? Stop already. Stop with the nipples.
What would Blanche say?
She would say, how does a man not have nipples? I don't get it. What? What?
Moving on to productive conversation. We want to discuss many things about medications. We did a whole episode on pill shaming, so we're not going to touch on that a lot, but we do recommend that you go back and listen to it if you haven't heard it already. But after that episode came out, people emailed us and they're like, well, what about this problem and this problem and this problem and this problem? And one of the ones that people emailed us about a lot and that has happened to you as well is people asking for our meds, literally offering to buy medication from us.
Yes, seriously. My friend was going to take Amtrak home, and she was so nervous about going to Penn Station and finding the train that she was like, can I buy one of your pills from you? One of your benzos? Can I buy one of them from you? And I was like, why do you need a benzo to catch an Amtrak train? You know, I'm not giving you medication that's for my psychological disorder so you can catch an Amtrak train.
So the first thing that she wanted to do was turn you into a drug dealer.
Yes, I am not a drug dealer.
So that was the first thing that, like, way wrong. And two, if you had done it, that would be one less pill for you, which would put your life at risk. I mean, how many could you sell before you're putting your own health in danger? This is just a very bad idea because you need those pills.
Right. I need them. I can't just give them away to people. I'm not just a little dispensary right here. Oh, click, click, here you go, click, here you go.
Because now you don't have the pills and you would get sicker.
Yeah, I could get more, but...
Well, but let's talk about that for a moment. This is one of the things that stigmatizes just pills in general. Painkillers, it stigmatizes all kinds of drugs that people need to lead a better life. And the first thing people say is, well, yeah, but they're just selling them. Like, they just paint everybody with that brush. And apparently it's so common that people feel comfortable offering to buy these pills off of people who they know have been prescribed them. So we have, like, a really big responsibility not to play into that hand, because then it will be harder and harder and harder to get those medications. And you already have a really hard time filling your scripts.
Oh, my God. When I get my ADD pill, the whole, you know, controlled substance thing, if they're unable to give it to me a day before I can get it filled, I have to get out-of-pocket payment, which is ridiculous because they won't give it to me one day early. They just drive me nuts at the pharmacy about this controlled substance. And the thing is, they will do that to me, but they're supposed to also take my ID, scan my ID, and write down my license number. But sometimes they don't even do that. They don't even follow their own rules.
Because the rules have become so cumbersome, they're almost impossible to follow. We're also living in an age of unnecessary medical treatments or medical just intrusion. Because, for example, a lot of people that are prescribed medications like that are being asked to get blood work done. Mm-hmm. They don't need the blood work. The blood work is not for any reason except to prove they're taking the pills. So we're living in a society where we're taking people who need the pills and subjecting them to unneeded medical tests that cost money, time, and energy and have some non-zero chance of complication, all because we're afraid of people breaking the law. And make no mistake, people are breaking the law, but it's people like us that are suffering the consequences of this. And that's wholly unfair.
It is unfair. I didn't even realize that's why they take the blood test, to make sure we're taking the pills.
Yes. Now, ideally, you need blood work for other reasons. Like, for example, I get a liver panel and a vitamin deficiency panel, but in that test, they're testing to make sure that I'm on the meds as well. So I'm not getting an unnecessary stick in that I would have to give blood anyway. But it's just the fact that, you know, my doctor's kind of spying on me. I understand the reason. And look, you can't fight City Hall. But just wow. Just wow.
You know, recently I went to the doctor just for my yearly physical. And they know I'm on meds and everything. And I was perfectly fine during the entire physical. Nothing was an issue at all. But yet, at that physical, I was given a piece of paper about depression and I had to fill it out. How about my feelings? Like, what about that visit made it seem like I have to fill out a paper about depression and how I feel? I feel fine. And the guy should have gotten that impression when I was with him. Would anyone else be coming in have to fill out that form about depression and how I feel? I felt like stigma right there. Just because he knows that I'm schizophrenic, I had to fill out a whole paper about depression.
See, that's one of those could go either way ones. I mean, let's be fair. Let's say that he did think that you were suffering from depression and he wanted to follow up on it. Like, that's really good. But he also could be like, she cray. I'm going to have her fill out this form to cover my ass. I wasn't there. I don't know which one it was. But so often the medical community sees mental health issues in people and they ignore it because they don't want to pry or go down that road. So in your particular case, I don't know which one it was, but yeah, it's kind of a damned if you do and damned if you don't. We have created a society where if you ask somebody about their mental health, people think it's rude. But if you don't ask people about their mental health, they could become sicker or suicidal or homeless or arrested or all our listeners know all of the bad outcomes of untreated mental illness.
Right. I mean, did I ever tell you the time I had strained my LCL and I fell outside of the subway? Somebody called an ambulance on me because my knee was so busted that I was in so much pain. I get into the ambulance and the guy said to me, "Are you healthy?" I go, "Well, what do you mean by healthy?" They're like, "Well, do you have any illnesses?" I said, "Well, I have schizophrenia." And quickly the guy asked me, "Are you hearing any voices?" And I go, "No. I'm here for my knee." And then I just got really mad. I got out of the ambulance, got in a taxi, and left. There you go. Didn't pay for that ambulance fee.
It's just like we talked about in a previous episode where our friend Rachel, the schizophrenic,
yeah,
she went in with all of these symptoms and she just kept saying, I need care. Please run the test. Look at me. There's something wrong. And they just kept insisting that it was in their head. And they wouldn't even run a basic test. And when she finally engaged the help of her father, they ran the test and they found out that it wasn't all in her head. So what if they would have put her off for so long that she would have had a complication or passed away, all because they just wanted to go for the simple thing? And I don't want to turn this into like pick on Doctor's Day, because that's not what I'm trying to say. I just wish that people were more aware that people with bipolar, schizophrenia, major depression, psychosis, etc., we get sick too. We have physical illnesses.
Yeah.
Mental illness doesn't mean that you live forever. So clearly we're going to die from something.
From something. Yeah. And also just bringing back, you know, people try to like borrow or buy your meds from you. You don't know if maybe they're allergic to the medication. So if I give you a pill and what if you die?
Yeah.
Then it's my responsibility.
Whose door do you think is going to be knocked on then?
Yeah. Who's going to go to jail then? You never know.
I'm guessing that it's going to be the little schizophrenic drug dealer.
The little schizophrenic drug dealer. I got to make that a shirt. Little schizophrenic drug dealer. There you go.
Yeah. That is not cool. Let's widen this for a moment. You know, there's a lot of people with mental health issues, a lot of people with mental illness, a lot of people with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder that are just broke. I mean, they're just dead broke. And they are so desperate for money to pay for medical care, to pay for food, to pay for housing, hell, to go to a movie and feel like a normal person, that when somebody walks up and, you know, offers them $20 for one of their pills that they got for not $20, it seems like a good idea. Not because they're evil, but because they're so desperate for money. Now, you know, our case is different, Michelle. We're lucky. We have families. We're decidedly middle class and we're not desperate for money. But can you see how that could happen? Do you see it?
I do see how that could happen because you're prescribed pills that other people want. And like, you know, the opioid crisis, of course, you know, people just get addicted to pills all the time. And then maybe they want to trade pills. People want to buy pills. And it's just turns into a whole crisis.
Yeah, a literal crisis. For fans of ABC's The Conners, this was kind of the, without falling down the Roseanne hole, this was sort of the thing. It said that the entire community was trading pills because they were broke, they didn't have money, they couldn't afford to fill their prescriptions. So they were sort of trying to medicate. They weren't trying to be addicts. They weren't on the streets selling drugs and trying to get high. They were just trying to treat their medical conditions. But because health insurance was so crummy for them, they sort of had this need to share their resources, to pool their resources. And ultimately in the show, Roseanne overdosed because she was getting drugs without a doctor's care and she took too many at a wrong time. This does happen in real life. And I think a lot of times we're vilifying the people who sell the drugs and we're vilifying the people who purchase the drugs because we think we have this idea of like, you know, I don't know, gangsters and drug addicts and evil people. But what we really have are desperate people trying to self-medicate their illnesses that can't afford good medical care.
That's a really good point, because if you can't afford the good medical care, how can you try to fix the issue?
Listen, I think anybody that listens to this show knows that I'm a huge proponent for universal healthcare. I believe that that's the solution to a lot of this, but I'm just a bipolar, so nobody's going to listen to me. But I just want to put it out there that one, if you have medication, don't sell it. It's dangerous. And two, if you're in a situation where you can't get good medical care, fight so hard. Just fight so hard. Find the health department. Call the emergency room. Call the local urgent care. Find a payment plan. Find a sliding scale. Because buying medications off of other people may seem like a fiscally responsible thing to do, but it is really, really dangerous. And I'm not saying this because I think you're bad people. I'm saying this because I want you to have better outcomes. So just, you know, that's our very special moment on a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. The more you know.
The more you know. I make money from sponsors, not selling my pills. We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. Secure, convenient, and affordable online counseling. All counselors are licensed, accredited professionals. Anything you share is confidential. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist whenever you feel it's needed. A month of online therapy often costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. Go to BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral and experience 7 days of free therapy to see if online counseling is right for you. BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral.
And we are back.
Michelle, what are some other annoying things that come up about our medications? Aside from, of course, we've already touched on, like, pretty much every episode, how when people say, have you taken your meds yet? That it's just like an incredibly demeaning question. Don't like what I say? Blame it on my mental illness. So we'll just skip over that one because really, I think everybody already knows that.
Well, it's something that's annoying. Is like, do you need to go up on your meds? Maybe you need to go up on your meds. Are your meds still working? Or how about this? Are you addicted to your medication? You're addicted to your medication.
People just can't understand that medication management is a reasonable thing. I understand that it's unusual because a lot of us are young. Mental illness is diagnosed between 16 and 24, and people are just uncomfortable with the idea of 20-year-olds and 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds on daily medications. And here's the thing. I'm now over 40, and I get a lot less pill shaming. Like almost none. My peers, they're all over 42 and they're all like, well, Gabe takes meds like I do. But when I was 25, they were like, kids are really mean to other kids. And yes, I am disgusted that I'm calling 20-year-olds kids. But the older you get, the less medication is stigmatized because we have a better understanding of it. How do we educate younger people that they just need meds? It sucks. You have a serious and persistent mental illness and you need to take them.
It's hard. It's really hard. When I was first put on meds, I did not want to be on meds. The first medications I went on did not go well. I hated them and I ended up in the psych ward. And when I got back to my dorm room, I took those meds and I flushed them down the toilet and said I was never taking medication ever again. And guess what happened 2 months later? I ended up back in the psych ward. So obviously that was not the right fix, but I didn't get medicated later until like maybe 6 months later, where I was put on a med that just really subdued me. And I mean, it wasn't the best medication, but it just kept me calm. But I really still wasn't even taking that regularly like I should have. But I feel like it's pride. It's so much pride to get over, to accept that you need medication. You have to take it. And if you miss it, things might not go well. So it was really just getting over myself and accepting that I needed it. When you're 20 years old, you don't want to think you need meds because you just think meds are for old people or meds are for crazy people. I'm not crazy. I don't need meds. I don't need it at all. See, I didn't take my meds today and I'm having a great day. But all throughout the day, it was like, see, I didn't take any meds. I'm having a good day. But then I didn't realize, why is this going around in my head all over and over and over again if I'm having such a great day? Didn't even realize it until I finally decided that I wanted to be a much happier, calm person, and I'll just take my meds when I'm supposed to take them, and then my life improved for the better.
I am trying desperately not to laugh at the idea that you think that you are a calm person. Michelle, I have bipolar disorder, and I have a different problem. Because bipolar disorder, everybody understands, is the extreme low, suicidal depression, all the way to the extreme highs, you know, godlike mania, you're invincible. But it's a spectrum disorder. You can be in the middle. So if you are completely untreated with bipolar disorder, you will end up stereotypical. You'll end up in the middle. You'll end up calm and rational and everything else. So many people, they sort of mess themselves up because they decide, I'm not going to take the pills anymore. And they stop taking all of the pills. And then they're in this normal stage. And they tell everybody they know, hey, look, I don't need the pills anymore because I'm on the treadmill. I found this new herbal cure.
Oh, yeah, the herbal teas. And, yeah, I love when people replace meds with herbal tea.
And with bipolar disorder, they feel fine for a while. It could take weeks or months or even a year to cycle. So they tell all of these people for the next year or months that they're fine and that they are managing bipolar disorder with fill in the blank. And then eventually they cycle, because that's how bipolar works. And they cycle up to mania, and then all kinds of ridiculous and dangerous things happen. Or they cycle down to depression, where all kinds of scary and dark and dangerous things happen. And they're not okay. But of course, all people remember is, well, I met that guy and he told me that he treats bipolar disorder with herbal cures, running on the treadmill, and yoga. And they're all trying to mimic it. And it's hard to defeat that, because somebody told us what we wanted to hear, which is that we can beat it without medication. And that guy was doing well at the time, or that woman was doing well at the time.
Yeah.
I wish more people understood that somebody without medication on bipolar disorder will naturally cycle to the middle of the road. It's how the illness works. It's not proof that they've beaten it.
Right. And all those people, they might be on antidepressants or something, and they start feeling better. And they're like, oh, I feel so great. I don't need these pills anymore.
Right.
I mean, what do you think the reason is that you feel so great? It's because of the medication.
Yes. And for many people, like with major depression, or even, you know, like bipolar 2 disorder, et cetera, the day that you stop taking the medication is not the day that crisis occurs. It really could be weeks or months later before you not taking the medication has this. I almost think that you're lucky, because if you stop taking your medication, you've said within a couple of days you start to have very adverse side effects. So you can kind of fix it faster. Other people I've talked to, they've gone off their meds and it's been 6 months before they crashed. It's been a year before they crashed.
My old roommate, when I would wake up in the morning, I wouldn't take my meds immediately. I would just start pacing in the living room, and she'd be like, did you take your meds yet? Can you just like take your meds already? Like she could immediately tell if I had not taken my meds yet. So, I mean, it's always, you know, it's easy when you have a person like kind of watching you, telling you to take your meds when you're doing it. Otherwise, I might just like fiddle-dee-ra, fiddle-dee-dee, and just like not take them, wander around. Or I don't know if you ever have this problem, but I'll be sleeping and then I start feeling anxious and I don't want to get up. But I know if I get up and take my meds, I'll feel better. But I'd rather just lay in my bed feeling kind of sad, kind of anxious, and I don't want to face the day. But if I would just get up and take my meds, I'd have a great day. But instead, I'm in my bed anxious and I'm not doing anything.
And this is a great segue into why, I know this show is about medication, so we're not going to fall down the rabbit hole on this one, but this is why it's medication and therapy. It's medication, therapy, experience, and coping skills. It's not just medication, because you've described that the medication is there. You have the right medication. The medication is in your apartment. You know what to do, but you are choosing to lay in bed and ruminate about the issue. You're choosing not to get out of bed. And that's not something that medication can fix. That's something that making better decisions and therapy can fix, because I do the exact same thing. I do. I self-sabotage. And I know that I do it. And by working with a good therapist, by learning good coping skills, and just having managed this disorder for almost 20 years, I've learned that, yeah, that's kind of how I'm wired. And I need to say to myself, Gabe, get out of bed and go to work. But I didn't learn that on day one. And that's why any conversation about medication isn't complete without understanding how it affects your body and how you can give it the best chances of working. It's not just a magic pill that magically makes everything better. It's a pill that puts you in the best position to succeed, but you still have to do your part.
Yes.
As you just illustrated.
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. So it's not taking over control of who you are, or it would automatically make Michelle Hammer get out of bed and stop pacing.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes I try to prepare them the night before, but that doesn't always work either.
Yeah. You take your pills weirder than anybody I've ever seen.
Really?
I use what I like to lovingly refer to as the granny pill cases, because that's what my friends called them when I was 25. But I use the, you know, it's got the day of the week, it's plastic, and I pop it up, and I have pill day where I put them in the little things. And
mine don't fit in there.
Get a bigger one.
I make my own pill boxes. You can get them at schizophrenic.nyc.
Why don't you make a pill box that fits all 7 days worth of pills?
People have suggested that to me, but if I order that, it's going to be very expensive, and I don't know if anyone's going to buy such an expensive pill box.
No, I'm not asking you for a business model. I'm asking why you don't go to the local store and buy Michelle Hammer a pill so that your pills are conveniently located every morning.
Because I don't want to feel like my grandmother.
Is that really why?
Kind of.
So here is the truth, if I'm being completely
stigmatizing.
Honest.
I'm stigmatizing myself.
I didn't use the boxes either because I didn't want to feel like my grandmother. And for years, I did it the way you do. I had a Tupperware, not a Ziploc bag.
I have a Ziploc bag with all my pills in it.
Yeah. I did it exactly that way. And I'm very lucky. My loving wife, it always comes back to Kendall.
She loves me more than she loves you.
That is not true.
She told me that last night.
That is not.
When she came into the guest room and snuggled with me.
Oh, well, that's awkward. But it always comes back to Kendall because Kendall realized that this wasn't the best way. And she asked me why I did it this way. And I said, you know, I just, my fingers are fat. I drop the little pills. I want to deal with this as little as humanly possible. And she said, why don't I make your pills for you? I'll make your pills once a week. And she does. She puts them together for me. And I just have to reach into the cupboard and take M for Monday.
M means Monday?
Yep. W for Wednesday.
W means Wednesday? But what does T mean?
Well, mine are special. I have T and TH. So T means Tuesday and TH means Thursday.
Oh, would you look at that?
Yeah. I buy quality.
You really go quality. What color is your pillowcase?
I have one for morning and one for night. And morning is purple and night is green.
Oh, that's
and you
sweet.
Know why I bought purple and green?
Because they're your favorite colors?
No, because they're recovery colors.
Oh, okay. Recovery colors.
Yep. And I am in
recovery.
We don't have a lot of time left, but one of the things that I want to talk about before we get going are people that say, well, I agree that I have major depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, but medication doesn't work for me. And I have kind of, I get this a lot where people say medication doesn't work for me. Medication doesn't work for me. And I always think to myself, that's impossible. And here's why I think that's impossible. I have kind of a standard answer that I give everybody. And what I basically explain is there are about 300 approved medications. And for example, I'm on 5 of them. I take 5 different medications. So if we use 300 as the estimated number that are out there and 5 meds total and ignoring things like dosages, et cetera, and just considering combinations, there's 19,582,837,560 potential combinations. Totals. That's not even considering ranges, like where you're put on a medication at 40 milligrams and you actually need 80. That's just the combinations for medication names only. So when people tell me that, hey, look, I've tried them all, there's trillions upon trillions of combinations.
That's true.
It's not even possible that you tried them all.
I've tried so many. I've tried so many different combos. I've tried so many different doses and everything until I finally found what works. It takes a long time. It's not easy, but I finally found what works and I'm sticking with it until something goes awry or anything like that.
And people ask why it takes so long. And I explain that again, go back to the 5 number. Each medication that a doctor prescribed takes about 6 weeks to reach efficacy levels so they can actually see what it's doing to your body and to your personality and how it's treating your illness. And they can't prescribe all 5 at once because if you have a side effect, they don't know which medication is causing the side effect. So they tend to prescribe them, you know, 1 or 2 at a time. So let's go with the 1 at a time, assuming the correct dose every time. 5 times 6 is 30. That means under the best case scenario, that's over 6 months before the doctor gets the right medication combination. And that's not possible. Doctors aren't magic. They're going to need to raise the dose, lower the dose. A med is going to cause a side effect that they didn't expect, et cetera. And they're going to have to adjust. And that's why you have to partner with your physician, partner with your psychiatrist so that you can report those symptoms and have the best possible outcomes for the lowest possible symptoms. But so many people believe that this is going to be like aspirin. You're going to go in and say, I have bipolar. Well, here's aspirin. Oh, now I don't have bipolar. Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
I had to explain that situation to my friends and people so many times when they were just like, oh, you're upset? Oh, just take that pill. I'm like, it's not like an aspirin. It's not like a Aleve. It's not a headache. You can't just take a pill and it makes it go away. It's way more complicated than that. It's way more complicated than that. But Gabe, you know what would be a fun game? Let's switch pills for the day.
No. That is an example of something that is hilarious to say, but terrible, terrible, terrible to do.
Will I grow into a gigantic red-haired man?
I would become a little angry schizophrenic.
Yeah, let's switch.
But
fun.
I don't think I'd be angry because I'm schizophrenic. I think I'd be angry because I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah. Why don't you just become a New Yorker?
I don't want to.
You wouldn't fit on the subway.
That's true. I would not. Happy holidays, everybody, from a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. Thank you for listening. Do all of the things that we always ask you to do, including leave us reviews, comment everywhere, and please share this on Facebook. If you have any topic ideas, email us at show@psychcentral.com, and be good to yourself, and we will see you next week.
Not for sale.
You've been listening to A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and A Podcast. If you love this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Head over to iTunes or your preferred podcast app to subscribe, rate, and review. To work with Gabe, go to GabeHoward.com. To work with Michelle, go to Schizophrenic.nyc. For free mental health resources and online support groups, head over to PsychCentral.com. The show's official website is PsychCentral.com/BSP. You can email us at show@PsychCentral.com. Thank you for listening, and share widely.